Good morning. This is Word Made Flesh, the radio ministry of Neighbors of Hope. We'll share struggles and triumphs and how through the Word, everyone can experience the loving and healing reality of Christ's compassion. Now here's the Neighbors of Hope Executive Director, Pastor Stephen Palmer, with this week's Word.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to this week's, this Easter Sunday edition of Word Made Flesh. How are we doing?
Good.
Gentlemen, it's Easter Sunday. How are you doing?
All right.
We're really excited about Jesus back from the dead. Okay. We spent all of our Lenten study going through the Gospel of Mark, and here we are on the most important day of the year for Christians, and that is the celebration of Jesus' resurrection. All right, and that's what we like to talk about. So, as we conclude our Markan journey for Lent, can I have somebody read Mark's version, all right, the Gospel of Mark's version of the resurrection?
When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early in the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who is crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him, but go, tell his disciples and Peter. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
Good. Always, what do you think they're afraid of? I mean, if this is Resurrection Sunday, right? This is the day we celebrate the God's vindication of Jesus from the dead. And then to have the gospel narratives talk about fear.
I think it's just the presence always. Like, anytime an angel, anything appears or a vision, yeah, they're scared. It's just the power, the authority, of the magnitude of the weight. It is always there. It's like,
I don't
be scared. You know, like, it's nothing compared to what some man that's Lord or leader can do. I mean, I don't know.
I think it's comprehensive, you know, in the sense that when I go back and I tell the guys at the Neighbors of Hope house that I just saw an angel, they're not going to believe me. All right? So there's the fear of your truth not being welcomed. All right? Then I think, well, if we welcome the truth, right, then there's the fear of, can we do it? Because we didn't do it on that prior to his. We didn't do very well prior when he was with us. Are we going to be able to do it right now that he's gone? That type of thing. So I think it's comprehensive, but I like the way Mark ends there because it strikes us, you know, that this is serious business, participating in a resurrected life with Jesus. Right? And if we focus too much on the fear, then we overshadow the hope of the empty tomb. So the minute we start having fear, we need to go back to that. So, all right.
What is it? It's
other insights.
It's in the other Gospels, not in Mark. Like, they have them doing different things. So Jesus, an angel moves the stone, and then after they move the stone, and he's not there. He was already gone. The stone's blown apart, kind of thing. And I just look at it. It's like I'm learning here. It's more of a statement, because I don't think Mark necessarily says, "Hey, here's an empty tomb." As a proof that they believed him, because if there was an evidence of their faith, in a sense, I don't think they would have ran. I don't think they would have been startled. really has anything. I think it's more or less a statement of it's just as traditional as it gets. It's a statement of I have overcome death. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a whole new level of humility, and there's nothing anybody can do about it, because what else can you do to somebody but kill them as people? That's the worst thing. And God's saying this is not it. That's not the last. And then the woman thing is just, they're always the first to respond. Especially in Luke, they're the most faithful. So why not have them show up first?
Yeah, I like the idea. They're the first witnesses of the new life. Mm-hmm. Other first responses.
Dampen the mood here, but I don't know. I think it could be just as simple as, you know, a dead guy is risen from the grave. That's how I would see it as. But it doesn't say it was an angel here. But that's my rather mundane interpretation.
The dude's literally not. He's direct. He's telling him to look somewhere else. He's literally saying it's not in the tomb. It's somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's outside of it. It's after the tomb. There's nothing here.
Okay. Yep.
Sorry.
No. There's nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's good. Anybody else?
I think it's a combination of a few things. Because it says that when they seen before. Talks about them fleeing and being afraid and that nature. It says that when they seen the young man, they were afraid. I don't think, like, personally, I don't think that they, like, you know, outright just knew it was an angel or anything like that. So I think there was the fear of who is this person, like that. And then it goes on to speak about Jesus risen, you know, not being there. And it talks about them being, they trembled and they were amazed, like in awe. And then, you know, they didn't say anything to anyone else because of what had just took place, you know, the death and everything like that. I think it was a protection thing of any more incidents or problems arising out of the fear of that probably happening and things like that, too. I think they would have told someone if someone had stole the body or anything, like, you know, they would have questioned where the body at, someone just stole our. Try to seek some type of, like you say, justice.
Yeah, we want to put ourselves in those shoes. I mean, you know, we go to a funeral home to see, you know, a loved one, and they open the casket and it's somebody else. We're like, what are you doing in the box? You know, so there's confusion, right? Because you got this guy sitting there, and when they're expecting to see somebody else, right? And yet, you're kind of, well, if you're in the box, is my beloved one living? And if they're back to life, then, I mean, right, this, I came here with a very grieving heart, and now I have this joyous heart. And that's really what, when we think about our Easter Sunday, you know, celebrating the resurrection, is the hope that comes in that joy, all right, that he's still alive, all right? And part of our study, we talked about kind of three components that really surround the resurrection event. And one that that Paul and the four gospel writers all talk about is, first of all, you know, Jesus lives, right? Many of our churches in this community and throughout the world will be singing songs about, you know, he's alive. Jesus lives, right? That the reality that they experienced prior to his death is still ongoing. That gives them a lot of joy. I mean, that's awesome, right? That's empowering.
I think there's little things in here that I don't even pay attention to, and it's just an addition to how I look at it. Like, I just pick apart details. Mark, as a writer of the gospel, he wasn't there when they walked up to the tomb. I think the only reason he talks about the stone being moved away is because historically, pretty sure, if I remember correctly, Jesus' followers were accused of taking his body. And this was his way of saying, no, that didn't happen. Look, they didn't even know the stone was removed. How would they have done that themselves? We need somebody to help us remove the stone. How are we going to do this? And then when they get there, it's already gone. It's moved. And It's a proof and evidence thing. It's that a lot of, I don't think a lot of the scripture, it's not to prove faith. It's not to, it's just evidence of something that occurred.
Well, let me share this with you, because it doesn't get shared too often. Because usually what we think is like the stone. Now, they, you know, back in the day, they would put the stone in front of those types of tombs. Because we're talking about decaying human flesh, all right? So it's really allow nature to take its place for a while. And kind of the Jewish tradition is afterwards, then when the body's really been decayed and there's just the bones, they'll take the bones and they put them in a little stone box, right? All right. So it's not that somehow or another the stone kept him in there as much as way, rolling away the stone gets us access to the space where the power of resurrection takes place.
You think there's a fear of, like what you were saying as far as like that hope being taken away, like looking crazy, you know what I mean? Like, go back and tell someone like us, and it turned out like, you know, hey, you know, because when you put it in terms of when you go to a funeral home and your loved one's not there, like, man, they still alive, if I'm mistaken. And then you expose it, like, man, I went here, and, you know, what's really going on? You got that hope that, you know, this person is still alive, is risen, that, you know, that is living, you know, it'll be a fear of looking crazy. You know what I mean? Like, that being crushed and diminished, that hope that you just, that newfound hope that you have, this person is alive.
Yeah, I mean, Paul talks about it. That's pretty much it. We're crazy. You know, they think we're fools. All right? But we know that we know that we know. And unless we really cling to that and the power that comes with this day, how else are we going to persevere and push forward as full participants in the way that Jesus taught us? Right? They called him crazy too. I mean, even his own family, right? He shows up and they think he's out of his mind. Because it's very different than what the norm is within our society and cultures and because those are antithetical to what God's intent is for God's creation. When we start aligning ourselves with what God wants to do, and we are fully participating in that direction, yeah, it's us walking the wrong way down a one-way street with all kinds of traffic. All right? And people go, yeah, imagine us, you know, down here on I-75 or 94, right? And we're in the middle of three or four lanes walking against the traffic. People are going to go, what the heck is wrong with that guy? Where's his? He done lost his marbles and everything. But if we are so convinced by the power of the resurrection and the hope that it grants us, we will continue walking down the wrong way in I-94. And gentlemen, that is not a suggestion. Let's not start walking down the wrong way. All right, as far as traffic like that, we don't want any accidents. But I think the metaphor is there, the analogy. All right. So yes, I also think because of that fear of being thought as crazy is also why a lot of us acquiesce to simply make, you know, we have a Christ of convenience today that really permeates our culture. All right, we've softened him. We've made it easier. If we look around the room and none of us thinks the other is crazy, then I must be okay. That we really fear being called the crazy one. And yet, the second thing that they talk about, Jesus is Lord. Not just my personal Lord, but my political Lord. All right? And as Lord, he's the crazy one. Well, let me be crazy like the crazy one then. All right? Because only then will we be strengthened and empowered enough to participate fully in his way. Well, I thank you very much for joining us on this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. May God's grace, peace, love, and joy be with you all.
Thank you for listening to Word Made Flesh. Neighbors of Hope brings people hope through a comprehensive suite of Christ-centered programs that include the Men's Ministry, Blessings and More Resale Store, our Third Day Farm Project, Fishes and Loaves Food Pantry, and of course, our radio ministry, Word Made Flesh. We're also in the process of establishing a women's and children's transitional housing program. Find out how you can become a neighbor of hope at neighborsofhope.com. And please join us again next Sunday morning for Word Made Flesh.